In a world of EMS podcasters, EMS Office Hours is the only live podcast bringing you the latest topics and opinions in EMS. Turn down your scanner and turn up your speakers as we join Jim Hoffman and Josh Knapp on their latest EMS podcasting journey.
Hey, Jim Hoffman here for EMS Office Hours.
And Josh.
Josh, how are we doing?
I am doing what are you doing? You've been running around a little bit.
Yeah. I'm getting anyone who's listening in, if you're trying to get into the chat, it should be opening up here in a sec. So
just I didn't know you controlled that from your end.
Yeah.
I thought for folks listening in, Jim was running a little late. He texted me, and I thought that I could get onto this, but I do not have keys to the kingdom.
No.
No, that is our host, Jim Hoffman.
You have special whatever for that.
So, listen, you called me earlier, you emailed me a couple of days ago, and you sent this topic to me, and you said, what do you think? And I gave you my opinion, and you still went with it.
Well, I didn't actually go with what I initially wanted to go with. You know, this thing that went on in Connecticut with this mass shooting and stuff, and I thought, you know, that maybe we could talk a little bit about, you know, the responders and, you know, how they react on something like that and deal with, you know, the aftermath of it. And some of the frustrations, I guess, that go along with that. Because I was talking to some people that I work with, and talk a little bit about some of the things that can be frustrating on a call like that. You think about, you know, children that are getting shot and you come on a scene like that and now you've got, you know, pretty much DOAs, right? And where if, and you're told, pretty much probably told or, you know, you have to make a decision that you're not going to work these kids up.
Yeah, it's a big one, right?
You know, think about if you had just an isolated accidental shooting of a child. You know, gun goes off and you go to the house and the kid's shot. Now, short of it being a massive headshot or a head injury like that, where you're going to say, okay, well, we're going to pronounce this right here. The kid's shot in the chest, something like that.
Aren't we going to run a slow code on something like that?
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on how severe it is, I guess I should say, you know, on an isolated type thing. But now you get on the call like this where you've got, what was it, 20 kids that were shot and killed.
Yes.
You know, now you come on the scene and now you have
to. Who do you go to first?
Right, and you know from pretty much by looking at some of the timelines of what went on, I mean, I'm sure there was more than just one ambulance that responded to this. So it's not like you had one ambulance that showed up and had to make a decision. You know, I'm sure you had multiple units responding to this call. You know, and I think they did transport two or three people to the hospital, but the rest of them they had to. You know, they had to go ahead and pronounce them there and you know, it becomes a crime scene.
You know, I have a
it's frustrating. I think that gets frustrating for providers, you know.
I think it becomes I think it's a dilemma for providers, honestly. I think that
because it's a split second decision you got to make.
Well, the other thing is that what and where I wanted to go was what training do most people have in taking care of a situation like that. I mean, I know that if I didn't seek out and join a special response team at my in my facility, I would not have gotten any of that training. And the truth of the matter is the majority of the training for MCIs and tactical situations that I've gotten has been on my own dime. It's been on my own time, and it's been it's very eye opening. I mean, but I just wonder to the EMT who basically maybe they have a little bit of salt on them. Maybe they've done a few MVAs and a couple of pronouncements in the house. Mm-hmm. But what this is the type of job that you can go your entire career and never even see. Never even see a tenth of it. You know, I mean, right. How many people go through their career and never see a real murder?
Yeah.
You know, so you know, an MCI that could be one of the as far as the news is selling it, it's the second worst school shooting in the history of. Of these type of things, and it's really kind of sad that we actually have a history of these things now. I mean, in my time, you know, it's not even something that you hear about in the history books. And when you talk about WMD or terrorism, you know, you think of Chechen rebel taking over that school.
Yeah.
What was that, about 10 years ago?
Yeah. I mean, and it's not, I mean, I don't want to, you know, the reason why I say I changed my thought process on this, because I didn't want to really necessarily focus on this tragedy alone. I mean, you think about just some recent things. You think about the hurricane, you know, that happened, the shooting that went on, or the Colorado, you know, the movie theater shooting.
Right. Virginia Tech, for crying out loud.
Yeah, I mean, these are things that are really, I think, trying EMS providers, you know. And when we talk about, and like you said, too, you talk about being sort of tested like this. Unfortunately, we get tested when it happens. There's not a trial period for it. You know, something like this happens, and you are told to respond, and
yeah.
You get there and have to sort of... And you're expected to rely on training, but then it becomes, you've got the training end of it, and then you've got, of course, the human element of it as well that you're supposed to put on the back burner, you know.
Do or no do. There is no try.
Yeah, that's what ends up happening.
And what, you know, and the truth of the matter is even training, I mean, you know, I remember – I'm a hazmat tech, and I've been trained a number just for years in hazmat. And I had a call, and it was a very, very minor call. But the idea of the bridge between, you know, practice and this is real is scary. I mean, so even though you were training – even though you may say that I know how to triage in an MCI, are you going to really follow the discipline of your training? And I say that for the majority of the training that we do, where we do it once and maybe 3 or 4 years later may touch upon it again or may never touch upon it again, that doesn't really count. You know, first time in any training scenario, you're just learning about the subject matter. You know, I now know that this discipline exists, you know, and maybe
right.
The second time you can have a little practice at it. But, you know, you got to get muscle memory. I mean, I worked with a guy who works in technical rescue, and I started learning about ropes and low angle rescues and things like that. And the truth of the matter is, what he drums into you is you cannot do this unless you practice it all the time. And not only practice it, you know, like tying your knots and stuff, but practice setting up rigging, figuring out what you're going to be, where you're going to go, where your crew is going to go, who you have to work with, the tactics of it, the logistics of it, how you're going to get equipment to where you need it.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you do that day in, day out, you can't be expected to do it on a once in a career scenario. Yeah. I think it's unfair. I don't think that the average EMS provider is equipped to handle something like this.
Yeah,
but we're expected to.
Yeah. Listen, I apologize to the listeners, too, because I was I got on here late, and I wanted to do a little bit of research on some of the articles that were coming out on some of these incidents, and wanted to sort of point out some of the things that I had read beforehand, and of course now I can't find it. But I did read one comment that was made on one of the articles where they mentioned about, instead of having sort of like these mass drills, like you said, Josh, you get this mass drill and everybody's involved, all different agencies, things like that, would be to sort of have it more along the lines of a, two medics, four, SWAT member type police, going in there, and doing it more on testing it and drilling on a smaller scale. So you can get a little bit of that muscle memory that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You think about having a mass, drill of an MCI, right? And you've got, 15, 20 ambulances and X amount of police officers and fire and all that good stuff. And how many people are really getting an opportunity to really get their hand dirty and be able to really remember what they're taking away from that training?
I participated in two citywide drills, and each time I basically sat in the bus with the crew,
exactly.
and we were basically there for logistics staging for
mm-hmm.
some captain to say, okay, I got these units over here. But we didn't get any hands-on. I mean, there was like four crews that were already with the municipality that we were working with that got the hands-on.
Right.
I've actually – been in this sort of training exercise where we had the scenario was a WMD attack, and for our patients, we basically, it was the old triage tag thing, but when we did it, we entered this dark smoke-filled room. We had gas masks on and respirators on, and
mm-hmm.
There were teddy bears. And let me tell you something, dude. That stops you freaking cold in your tracks, even though it's all staged, all set up. It's your task. You've been briefed upon it. You're going to try to rip through this thing as quick as you can. How many things can you triage? You start picking up teddy bears, and it freaking just sends cold shiver down your spine.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, but like you said, it's the type of thing where you can train for these things, right? But when it comes to getting there and trying to have sort of this cold, detached approach to it, to sort of triage, people, who's, like you said, you're making that decision, that God thing where you've got to decide now, who do you try, who don't you try?
Right.
It's not as simple as a textbook of going through a triage tag and, reposition the airway, and then if it doesn't work, then leave them type thing.
Right.
It's not that simple.
And how would you come across a bloody classroom where, you have 20 kids sprawled around? I mean, my heart goes out to the responders who had to cover that scene because, I'm sure that a lot of them are going to have problems for the rest of their lives. I'm sure there's going to be a number of good people that are just going to say, that's it. I've done it. I've been there and I don't want to do it anymore.
Right.
And I know that I couldn't blame them, Jim.
Yeah.
I don't think our system is set up to really, I think, once again, and I don't want to sound like a broken record about this and I bitch about it, but I think that we're the bastard redheaded stepchildren of the emergency response system. And because for the majority of services out there, we're volunteers, we're not considered in the same light as the police and FD that respond to this. You know, you can be damn sure that all the FD, not all the PD that's been involved in this, and all the sheriffs and all the FBI and all the other guys that are doing this crap are going to be getting all sorts of debriefings and counselings and all the other things to decompress from an episode like this. I'm wondering about the first responders, the EMS first responders.
Yeah. Well, it's you know, I guess time's going to tell with that. I don't want to, you know, pull the trigger too soon and start saying that, you know, the what about us type thing. But, you know, unfortunately, all too often that does end up what happens. You know, the EMS end of it does sort of get...
Fall short.
Yeah. Sort of get brushed aside and get thrown into emergency workers, you know, that's what we sort of fall under. But yet, you know, to me, I mean, on this event like this is the type of thing where, you know, these are guys and girls and women that were on this call that really were the front lines and saw this, you know, this horror up close, and to just sort of, you know, brush that away would be a shame, you know.
Well, you know,
I'm hoping that there's going to be plenty of opportunities for all these people, the police, the fire, and the EMS, and all to sort of have, you know, a place to turn to, like you said, decompress and have that stress debriefing, I guess, you know.
Critical incident stress debriefing, right? Yeah. Right. And, you know, there's an entire – and, you know, some of the good things that sort of developed out of what's the name of the – in Ohio? The Edward R. Murray – it was in Ohio? Edward R. Murray building.
Mm-hmm.
The Timothy McVeigh.
Oklahoma, you mean?
Oklahoma, right.
Yeah.
In Oklahoma, you know, a lot of, there were children involved with that too. You know, let's not forget some of the most dramatic pictures in sort of modern EMS history are some of the EMTs and medics coming out with, you know, babies in their hands and some of these children. And some of these guys, you know, they realized there was a need for this after a lot of these people dropped out, a lot of them turned to drugs, and some of them even killed themselves. Mm-hmm. And there was this whole sort of emergence of this new science that says, you know what, there you cannot absorb, you are not a endless vessel to absorb this type of hurt and pain. You know, there is a level to what you can take, and you need to be followed up on in these situations. And I don't think that we get enough credit along that line.
I mean, so do you think that there's a way to sort of get some type of training, you know, to prepare us for this type of thing?
I
mean, beyond just MCI type stuff, going through the, you know, the motions of, I mean, I've been to a bunch of MCI trainings. I've done, you know, drills and all that stuff as well. And again, I always find that, you know, the EMS part of it is in a tent someplace, you know, or
right,
sitting in the ambulance type thing.
Don't worry, you're going to operate in a cold zone.
Yeah, right.
Right.
But again, like you said, you just made a great point there. You know, you're operating in the cold zone. The reality of it is that when we respond to assignments like this, we're not in a cold zone, you know. And what are you going to do? You can be the person that waits when they tell you that it's a school, that this is going on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
Especially if you're getting reports that the shooter themselves is reportedly down, but then we want to make sure everything is secure first before you get in here.
I think that you'd really have to – I don't think – first of all, when the shit hits the fan in that way, and you've been to a couple of maybe, you know – where am I going with it? Maybe not – active shooter incidents, but you've definitely been to where it's hot, where there's things going on, you're uncertain, and there's aideds inside. And, you know, my experience with those is I have never been held back. I have always been, come this way, oh, you're here, thank God, go here, or come along, I'll bring you. You know, I mean, there's, you know, the worst thing in the world is when you pull up, there's a whole bunch of equipment and there's nobody outside except a cop at the door because you know where you're going.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, can we be prepared for this? I think that I really think in the end it comes down to, you know, the Yoda do or no do. There is no try. Yeah. But you can learn what you're supposed to do so you have something to fall back to instead of making it up as you go along.
Yeah, I think I think some of this training that we're talking about, I think good, like, sort of classroom instruction by professionals that can sort of help us with some sort of coping skills.
And some role playing.
Right, exactly.
Role playing.
Right.
But, you know, it's funny. I have, in all my time, now, I started going down the path to become a critical incident stress debriefer. I went and took a couple of classes in it. There's about four. And if anybody's listening to this and they want to get into that, you know, they're always saying that they're looking for people who are involved in the industry to be able to learn this, because the truth of the matter is if you come across something horrible, you're not going to want to talk to, you know, a school mom psychologist, or something like that. You're going to want to talk to somebody who's been there, done that, got dirty in the streets, and sort of knows where you're coming from. And, you know, it's just like, you know what, we pride ourselves on having our own sick form of humor, right? I mean, all over the place on these EMS sites, it's like,
We just had a show on that, actually, right?
Right. And so we all pride ourselves on that, that that's ours and we own it. But, you know, doesn't it go hand in hand with that, Jim? If we have our own sense of humor, then we have our own way of dealing with this. And, and we need our own sort of, you know, debriefing and decompression and, you know, one size don't fit all is what I'm trying to say.
I've been through some of that debriefing stuff myself on calls that I've been on, but I never found it all that helpful. But maybe it was helping me without me knowing it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's a, you know, what I understood about it is there's a certain amount of construction and organization that we do on our own, and when we're talking about it in a group, it helps a little bit. The idea is, though, to really weed out and identify those who have the coping mechanism and are able to deal with it and those who don't. And hit them off at the pass. And so if somebody is really having a tough time or not responding to the debriefing well, you know, there's the education and interception that you can do with that person on a one-to-one basis.
Yeah.
Some of the theory that goes behind the critical incident.
One thing I think, too, you talk about that sometimes, this whole Monday morning, you know, quarterback thing, and I'm sure a lot of cops and EMS and fire and stuff are sitting around now in other states and other areas saying, what would you do in this sort of situation? You know, and it's almost like you're having your own little, unofficial role playing going on as far as what you do and you know, how you might handle it, you know. And I think that is a way that can, you know, sort of help us as well, by talking about it, you know, even if you're not directly involved, by sort of getting it out there and say, okay, let's discuss what we do. I mean, I know, like, by me, we've got, just two immediate ambulances that can respond to a local assignment. So there's not a lot of help coming, you know.
Right.
Goes for anything. It's not just something like this. It could be anything, even like with the hurricane and all. You know, it's like there's a major disaster where something major goes on from a hurricane or something, and then what? You know, it's Like I mentioned in the show notes for this, it's like, you know, it's a type of thing where we really have to recognize that we are, you know, the ones that are right there, you know, and how rapidly and how fast we can go from, you know, doing that nursing home fever type call, you know what I mean, or the flu call. And then next thing you know, you're getting told to respond to a building collapse or, you know, a shooting like this or, you know, something like, you know what I mean? So,
right.
And it's the type of thing, and I guess it applies to all levels of emergency services, you know, fire and police as well, where you've got your sort of routine, you know, where the cop maybe is just giving out tickets and, you know, and doing sort of, you know, your average civil disturbances type thing, and then all of a sudden they find themselves in the same type of situation. I'm not sure how much training you can get that's really going to prepare you for it. I think it goes back to, like you said, the whole, you know, do or don't do.
Do or no do?
Yeah, who do that you,
you do so well. So well. It's, you know, it's kind of interesting, I think, because if you really break it down, there is a unique individual that rises to the calling of emergency services.
Yeah.
I mean, to be the first responder, to run in when others are running out, requires some level of makeup that is not in sort of the ordinary vein. However, on top of that, we're not Superman and women, you know, we're not impervious to the hurt and the things around us, and we're certainly not trained on how to deal with it and how to, you know, there's no level of desensitization process that can prepare you for a response that way. And I think that the only thing to be said about that is to have a strong system in place to support the first responders when they do respond, when they do have to respond.
Yeah. Listen, my heart goes out to these guys that were, all these people that are on this assignment and having to deal with this. And, you know, you got to sort of hope that, like you said, they're going to have that support system there and, you know, between their coworkers and maybe something more official, hopefully, you know, with psychiatrists and psychologists and whatever, to help them through some of these things that they're going to have to, you know, get.
Yeah, and, you know, some stuff just will never, ever, you know, you just have to know it'll never leave you, and you have to know what the triggers are, and you have to know how to avoid it, you know, not drill yourself. I mean, for some of the other stuff that was going on, I remember watching a psychologist on TV or something saying there's an actual syndrome where people, just from watching TV and watching the coverage of a disaster, can get a form of PTSD.
Sure.
Now,
oh, yeah.
You can get that from just sitting in your comfortable, you know, warm, secure living room.
Well,
and watching the TV, what's going to happen to the people who are there?
Yeah, look at 9/11. You've got people that were involved in EMS and stuff and fire departments and all, and they weren't sent to, you know, to the to ground zero, you know, and they have that whole thing with that survivor's guilt thing going on, you know. So it's not just always the people that end up, you know, in direct contact with it. You know, sometimes it does sort of trickle down to, like you said, people that watch it on TV or people that work in the area or neighboring areas that, you know, might have been there that didn't because they were on another call or because they just had enough resources there, and, you know, and they have that survivor's type guilt going on as well, you know.
So what's the preparation that a person, you know, who's already steeled themselves up to see some pretty ugly things, to see the things that, you know, most people would never see in a lifetime, we see on I don't want to say routine basis, but
well, more than the average bear.
Yeah, easily. I mean, listen, how many people you pronounced? I know I've pronounced a lot, so that means that I've seen.
I couldn't give you a count.
Right, exactly. And it's like, so unless you're a funeral director, how many dead people do you normally see? Right? You know, on just that level. And even though it's, and the majority of them are peaceful,
and,
quiet,
yeah, exactly.
Right. Or however.
But there's still a level that you have to deal with that. I mean, I've gotten emails.
Dude, I remember this nursing home job where we were working the code up, and the wife happened to show up at the time, like she usually visits her husband about that time, and we were there doing CPR. We were getting on the phone with telemetry to get time for pronouncement because we had started a resuscitation effort, and she was like, you know, is it all right if I just stand by the door and call in? I think he can hear me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, that, even though that in the scheme of what we respond to, that's trivial.
Right.
I mean, still, that
but
still gets me.
But I think that's the type of stuff, though, can actually, are the things that can actually affect you. You know, it's little things like that can actually end up, you know, sort of, affecting you on that, you know?
Yeah. And that's the point. I mean, that's, you know, there's, how do you gird somebody to walk into a situation where innocent life has been lost?
Yeah.
On a large scale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you protect the responders?
Yeah. And listen, I got the same before. I get a lot of emails from visitors to my website and the blog and all, and one guy had asked me recently, you know, how do you guys prepare yourselves, you know, to seeing, you know, blood squirting or broken bones and things like that. He's like, you know, I can look at transmission fluid, you know, squirting out of a hose. It doesn't bother me, but as soon as I look at you know, blood squirting out, I get queasy, you know. And there's really no, and again, even like you, I've actually seen a few posts on Facebook and some of the Facebook pages where they say, hey, I'm an EMT. I've been an EMT for 6 months, but I just had my first code. It's really affecting me. And how do I get this out of my head type thing, you know? And it's a difficult, I guess, question to really answer and give somebody a definitive answer on how they can handle it. You
well,
know,
it's certainly...
You know,
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think it goes back to what we said before. It's like, it's either you know, there is no try. There is only
do or not do.
Do
that voodoo that you do so well.
Yeah.
I think that this is not a case. And the thing is that we talk ourselves into this idea that we are supposed to be supermen and women, that we are supposed to withstand this, that this is just a part of the job, that everybody goes through it.
Right.
And it is...
It's not true, though.
It is absolutely not true. And the way, the just the same way that you get yourself ready to deal with that bleeder, you know, that person who just had that bad accident and they're spurting blood all over the place, and you sort of put yourself inside your training and you know what to do, you know how to stop heavy bleeding, you've been trained on it, and you go through the routines that you've practiced in class to or practiced on a lesser case with other injuries, and now here's the big one, and now you're really making a difference in this person's life because your fast action is stopping them from bleeding out.
Mm-hmm.
Just in that same way that you've sort of gone through those motions, you also have to know what the motions are to go through in case that you've been, you know, you've come across a situation and been traumatized. And that is, I think, where we fall short. We fall way short. There's not, there is enough of a stigma in society with mental illness as it is. I mean, you know, think about it. It's really something that, you know, 15, 20 years ago wasn't even covered by most insurance policies.
Yeah.
You know, so if, you know, there's a point, you know, they always say, you know, if you're having an issue in understanding or dealing with somebody, you know, the first person to talk to is maybe your partner, you know, and then maybe seek out somebody within your world of organization, since you do deal in healthcare, to talk to somebody. You know, a lot of organizations now have numbers that you can call, and they're sort of forming the structure of supporting, you know, of supporting the first responders. I don't think it's 100% there. I think that if you ask the majority of people out there today, they wouldn't know where to go. I think that's the sort of responsibility of the organizations we work for as well, to make sure that they know that these things are available to them.
Yeah, I think what ends up happening is that you don't know until something happens, and then that's when you see things posted. You know, you'll see something posted that, you know, hey, we've got the meeting if anybody wants to attend, you know, regarding whatever situation it is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So... and again, you know, listen, this is, I don't know what the answer is. You know, I'm not sure if it's the training or is it just some way to, you know, I'm not sure how we prepare, either preparing for it before something happens or preparing for how to deal with something, you know, after the fact, how to provide that those services to people and get people involved, not let them sort of just try to deal with it on their own, but sort of, you know, aggressively, you know, give people the opportunity to, you know, take part in some of it, you know, and not just say, well, if you wanted it here, you know, sort of have official things that people, you know, have to sort of take a role in, you know, because again, sometimes people might resist that sort of, you know, critical incident, you know, session.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if they're forced to go to it, at least one session, saying this is a mandatory thing, you have to go, we're going to talk about it. You don't have to say anything, but you really should be present, you know, for it. And sometimes people might take something away from that that might help them get over that hurdle, where that if they didn't take part in it, they wouldn't get over it.
Right.
You know, or get to that next level of understanding and emotional.
Pick up that card that's made available at that meeting to be able to seek out, you know.
But after the fact.
So, after the fact.
Yeah, exactly.
And you want to know something, there's going to be a certain amount that no matter what you do, they're going to fall through the net. I mean, it's just going to happen, and this is the sad thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, if you think about, and I don't have, you know, it's interesting we're going down this path. I wish I had some of these stats, but I do know that we have, in our industry, we have an abnormally higher than normal level, if there could be considered a normal level, mm-hmm. of depression, of suicide, of drug use, of job instability, of divorce.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, of incarceration. I mean, all of that exists within our profession at a higher than normal level. So that's your wake-up call to say, that's your little bit of knowledge there to say, I maybe don't work in a run-of-mill profession. Maybe I should have some of these things at my beck and call. The same way, you know, just to do your job, you know, a lot of us have like Hippocrates or Medscape on your PDA. So you come across a drug that you don't know, you're not sure of what it's used for, you want to know if there's interactions with what you're doing, or you want to be able to, if you're an EMT, you want to just be able to tell the doc that they're using this type of drug and you know the significance of it. You carry these things, the resources at your disposal. Just as those things, these are resources that, you know, we should seek out and make sure, and hopefully our organizations are enlightened enough to put them at our disposal.
Yeah. No, and I think, you know, people sometimes, you know, if you, it doesn't hurt sometimes, I think, to sort of, you know, seek some of these avenues out a little bit.
You know,
no. So that, not that it's going to, again, it's not that it's going to prepare you for anything like this. And again, not just to focus on just this one thing with this Connecticut shooting, but any to sort of, you know, mass casualty where it taxes not just resources, but it taxes, you know, emotions, and it taxes what you're prepared to do on a daily basis. And I mean, and the hurricane that just happened is another example of that. And you know, how do we get ready for it?
And the thing is not to sit there and say, well, that won't happen to me.
Right. That's the thing. That's a big eye opener for me, Josh, to be honest with you. I mean, this thing happened in Connecticut. It's not really, not a city. It's not, you know what I mean? And I say to myself, you know, this type of thing really, you know, it opens your eyes to realize that it can happen in any town, in any city, you know, out there. You know, so anyone has to, like you said, you cannot have that attitude of it's not going to happen where I am.
You know, I mean, come on. Remember when Katrina hit and we were looking at it, and regardless of your political end, you know, that's FEMA, that's Bush, that's whatever. This was a situation where it globally hit in a part of the country. I mean, it just devastated an entire area is too small. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a multi-state devastation that occurred. There's not enough resources, period. The people who are the resources there are taken out. I mean, they all looked at that and they said, yeah, well, you know, that's that southern thing. That's not going to happen here. We're much more sophisticated. And then, boom, Sandy comes. And the people on the Jersey Shore, I mean, how many Facebook posts did you see of people looking for equipment, you know, trying to pull their units together, anything,
yeah.
Old ambulances, old fire trucks, anything.
Yep.
I mean, that's a step back.
Yeah, it definitely, it's, you know, like, it definitely, you know, like it cannot just rule it out that it's not going to happen, you know, to you. You know, you pray and you hope it's never going to, but you've got to just keep that in mind, you know. And training is part of it, but I think also having that mental, you know, that mental state that it can, you know, can go a long way, you know.
Right.
Josh, a couple of things I want to mention today too. It, you know, it's just amazing to me, and something I wonder if this stuff hits the news because of recent events like the Connecticut thing. It was a guy in a hospital in Alabama. You see that?
Yes. Right after this,
yeah,
guy opened
Saturday.
Up. Right, and there was another thing. What was that? He shot somebody.
Well, the Alabama thing, yeah, the guy shot a cop and two employees of the hospital until another cop ended up mortally
taking him out.
Yeah,
right.
And they're not even sure why how he got into the hospital with the gun or why he was there, what he was doing. They're still investigating that. I haven't seen anything followed up on that just yet.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I mean, they do say that these incidences bring out, you know, bring the people who are on the borderline of committing such a crime or committing such an incident to step out and do it. You know, it gives them the sort of the motivation to, oh, I'm going to do that. There was a guy also yesterday who was busted in a Florida shopping mall, and he shot off like 50 rounds. Didn't kill anybody, didn't hurt anybody, but just shot off like 50 rounds. I mean, right after something like this, what do you think is going to happen to the public? It's going to go nuts.
Yeah. And there's another thing, too, that this is something we had talked about recently, and this is a scene safety thing, too, with the guy had killed a sheriff deputy. This was in Missouri on Saturday as well. And the EMS is there. They were loading an unconscious patient into the ambulance, and the guy ended up shot and killed the deputy.
Wait, this the unconscious person wasn't unconscious.
No, somebody else.
And was oh.
Yeah, it was somebody else.
So it was almost like a domestic.
So and they're saying there's no motive. They can't find a motive to why that happened yet.
I think it's, you know, the same thing as anything else that we face, Jim. I think that it's just the same way that when you go, you know, when you have a MVA on the highway, you sort of have a better idea of where to park, where to put your vehicle, you know, how to operate in a safer, in how to make your environment as safe as possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's certain training that you should seek out, if not offered to you, on how to make yourself as safe as possible in these. And always keep in mind, we do a dangerous job. There are aspects of it that we will not be able to control or protect.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, this thing with the deputy was shot and killed.
It's pretty fucking scary.
This guy ambushed the deputy and apparently the crew when they were doing it. You know, he actually, you know, ambushed the crew and it was happening. I mean, it's funny. I read a thing in Facebook too, some comments on some of these things, and somebody had said, you know, it's like we're sitting ducks out there.
Yeah.
You know?
We are. But and even more so,
because what's the answer? You're not gonna stop responding. You're gonna be responding to all different types of calls, and you know if you're gonna respond to something that's gonna where you got somebody who's pissed off or you know, looking to, you know, make a statement or what the case may be.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, have you ever done any active shooter scenarios or training?
No.
Yeah. Neither have I. I mean, I've done some tactical stuff. You know?
I'm looking for this damn thread that was going on. I forget whose page it was on. I was hoping maybe John in the chat room was going to point out who said it. I think Skip Kirkwood, I think, was the one that mentioned it in response to a thread about, you know, some idea of how to train to respond to these types of things. You know,
John, you're military, right?
John's
military.
Yeah.
Right, so he would certainly have gotten. I mean, he knows the difference between concealment, cover, and what the hell is the other thing? I'll Google it right now. No. That's time distance shielding, you know, and that's what we learn for the softer side of life, you know, the chemicals that can kill you in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
This is when somebody's, you know, shooting at you, and to know the difference, you know, you hide behind a bush. A bush isn't going to stop a bullet. But, you know, most people don't know that you could hide behind a car, and if you're not hiding behind a car in the right area, you may be concealed, but that's not cover, or that's not not going to stop a bullet.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to Google right now the name of that third thing that you got to do. But, you know, but that's sort of what I'm talking about, too, is the – at least I understand that. So, you know, if I were in that situation, I may not be better off than the guy standing right in front of the gun, you know. But I would have an idea if I were hiding behind a car, what part of the car is going to, you know, stop a bullet and what part of the car pretty much won't stop a bullet. And, you know, it used to be you could hide behind, you know, we were going over this too, and it was like, used to be you could hide behind the engine compartment because the engine, you know, the engine block is certainly going to stop just about anything that comes through. The truth of the matter is most engines are pretty small nowadays, and it's mostly empty space. So it's really not the best place. You know, the place that you want to be, you know, is behind the B post. Or the C post, you know, behind, you know, just forward of the trunk, and not in front of the rear wheel.
I think for most people, you know,
getting lost in that. Sorry.
No. I mean, I think most people out there that you know already for the most part when you respond to call that there might be a potential, you know, for that issue going on. You're going to stage away. You're going to, you know, maintain a safe distance until the scene is secure. You know, it's like these things, though, that have been going on, it's like, I mean, honestly, I just don't see how people can prevent getting into these situations. You know,
right.
I don't know how you can prevent the two things I just mentioned. How you, you know, you can be in an emergency room and somebody can come in there with a gun when you're dropping your patient off. You can be, again, any call, you know, where you get somebody who wants to, you know, make a point by shooting an EMS, you know, EMS people and taking out a couple of cops that might be on the scene with you, whatever the case is. And it's just, you know, I don't think there's any training that can really prepare us 100% for it. You know,
no.
I like to say that a lot of, I mean, I think we should be are most aware as we can when it comes to the situations that we're in, and always be on the lookout. And this goes back to what we mentioned a few minutes ago as far as understanding and acknowledging that it can happen anywhere. And if you can do that, I think, and always maintain, your wits about you, so to speak, so that you are aware if there's somebody who's not, doesn't belong on the scene, who doesn't belong in the area, it's approaching, that person could be a potential, threat, And I think that's what we have to, start putting out there, that, nowadays, if the person isn't a family member or somebody who you know belongs there at the scene, then they shouldn't be allowed anywhere near you or the scene at all. Whether they're looking to help or not, it's getting to a point where our safety is going to be, compromised by letting people just approach just because they can,
Right.
We get on the scene. How many public scenes you get on? You get on a public scene. There's no way, people are just all around. It doesn't matter.
Well, what you're talking about, Jim, I mean, on the short side of that is just incident awareness.
Yeah.
And, that's something that gets light treatment, I think, in any class, any training class, but is something that theoretically we have to deal with and learn as we go along, and is our duty to sort of go after, because mm-hmm. that's the thing that's gonna, what's the number one responsibility we have in this job, and that is to go home at the end of the day in one piece, to hopefully live to fight another day. And that's your responsibility. Nobody can take that responsibility and give it to you or assume that responsibility from you. That's your mm-hmm. responsibility. So whether it's pulling over to an MC, pulling over at a car accident or an MVA, to responding to a building fire, to responding to an active shooter and an MCI, you're supposed to be part of the solution, not part of the problem.
Yeah. Well, Josh, when we end it there, I don't want to keep going on and on. I do wish the providers that were there, the best. I hope that they, can get through this and get the help that they need, and that people will lend them their ears so that they can mm-hmm. sort of share what they went through and, maybe help them get over this hurdle. This is I think definitely going to be a hurdle for most of them. Again, no matter how much you've seen, that's not going to prepare you for that.
And I think it's important also to just discuss the point that you don't have to have been a provider that was there. You could have been a provider that's sort of seen enough that you really haven't, you've sort of held inside, you've shouldered the burden on your own, mm-hmm. and, this could be the tripping point. But, to educate yourself to the signs and symptoms of PTSD and stress and depression, and seek help if you think, at any point, you're experiencing that. I mean, we always talk about the river of denial for our cardiac. What's 9/10 of our cardiac people done? They've put off, I thought it was heartburn. I figured I'd lay down until it went away.
Yeah.
And then we give them that look, we do the 12 lead, and we get them to the cath lab. The same thing is, if you're showing these signs and symptoms, and there are enough out there on the net, go seek treatment.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, listen, got one more show before the end of the year and Christmas. We might actually, I think we have one, I think the 30th, I think, is this. Last show of the month, I think. Right? I don't have a calendar.
Holy crap. Wait a second. I'll tell you in a second. I hate when people say that. Oh, by the way, it's the end of the month.
Yeah.
30th. Yeah. Son of a bitch.
So that'll be our last show.
For the new year, man.
Before the year. So we'll see how that goes. We'll try to get two more topics for the end of the year. I want to try to make something interesting for people to join us in on.
Yeah, I hope people get off their lazy fat butts and come up with a topic and mail it into us, and we'll definitely cover it, you know?
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, I mean, otherwise it's always, and I got to give credit where credit is due. It's mostly you. I was going to say it's us, but the truth is it's mostly you, because I'm not even pulling my weight when it comes to coming up with these things to talk
about. Tell me about it.
Yeah, I know. I'm just sickening. Yep.
Well, again, well, like Josh said, everybody, if you have something you want to talk about on the show, be sure to send it over to me. My email directly is jhoffman@ems-safety.com. Send me any suggestions you have for a topic or a story you might have seen that you think might be able to become a topic of some type. Be more than happy to try to work a show around it. I think it'd be great to do that. You know, I've actually created shows in the past a few times for, you know, suggestions that I've received. So I'd love to go ahead and keep doing that, because, like, you know, we always say, Josh, this show is for the listeners, and we try to get topics that are going to get people thinking and get them engaged and what they want to listen to and talk about when it comes to all things, you know, EMS. So I hope, you know, hopefully maybe 2013 we'll push that angle a little bit more and try to get people getting more topics in.
You know the best part about all of that, Jim?
Which part?
The best part of this is a show for our listeners and all that nonsense. Because we actually know we don't listen to our listeners. I
listen to them.
Okay. You're a softie.
I'm very, very dedicated.
But we don't have to come up with solutions.
Yeah. Exactly. I don't think anyone that comes on the show has to either. You know, I don't want anybody thinking, and that's part of, I've gotten actually emailed, Josh, on that, people that don't call into the show or don't join the chat room because they're like, well, I don't know what to say about it. I don't really have an answer to what you're asking in the show notes or what you guys are talking about. And it's not about the answer. It's about giving your opinion, you know, giving what you think may be the answer. I think it all ties in, and I think in the end that, you know, when we try to come up with solutions in the industry, you know, it can, you never know, you know, something that somebody either comments on in the chat room or calls in and says, you never know, it might strike a nerve with somebody, you know, and it might change a protocol, or it might change maybe an operating procedure or a way that we get taught or an in-servicing that we do. You never know. You know,
you know what? If it starts discussion outside of here, then we're doing our job.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's the bottom line, because, you know, if people aren't talking about this, then it just gets buried. The whole issue about EMS being the bastard, redheaded, shoeless stepchildren of the emergency response system, you know what? That's a topic, and we need to always talk about it. We always need to keep it out there, because otherwise they're all going to just, yeah, okay, so we have EMS. We're good with it.
Yeah. Well, John, from the One Union 801 webcast, that's a show on Blog Talk Radio as well. He said he's got a show day after the main calendar, end of world.
No, I think the day of, isn't it?
He says, I've got the first show after the end of the Mayan calendar.
Okay. So the Mayan calendar is 21, right?
I don't know.
That's Friday. So will either be John's show or not?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another thing. You know, we're both working and...
You're working on Friday, so that's the end, and that's the end.
You're going to get a few calls the day after.
You know what? I didn't even get a few calls that night.
Yeah.
People don't watch television that day, so we're not to deal with it. All right, so Josh, listen, let me end it there. Again, anybody any suggestions, comments, concerns, were you positive or negative, be sure to send to me. My address is jhoffman@ems-safety.com. And until next week, Josh, as always, we'll stay safe, and we'll see you next Sunday.
Thanks, Jim. You too.
All right. Good night, everybody.